next presentation from Cindy and Colette on item 14, an action item to review a resolution endorsing the recommendations of the Environmental Flows Advisory Committee you just heard about.
Cindy? Good morning. Good morning. Thank you, Chairman. For the record, my name is Cindy Leffler. I'm here today with Colette Barron. I'm with the Water Resources Branch and the Coastal Fisheries Division. Colette is with the Legal Division. We're here to provide an overview of the Environmental Flows Advisory Committee, also known as the EFAC, heard a little bit about, and ask for your support for the EFAC's recommendations. Environmental flows has been a very important issue for our department for many years. You've heard in-stream flows in rivers and streams, freshwater inflows to bays and estuaries. Everyone agrees these are important for maintaining healthy ecosystems. What not everyone agrees on is how you go about protecting these flows, a very contentious issue over the years, one of the battles in the water wars that we've been fighting over the years. Before we begin getting into the actions of the EFAC, I want to provide a little bit of background about how we got to where we are today. Go back to about year 2000 when a number of private groups, others, began applying for state water right permits with this radical notion of leaving water in the stream for the environment. Many of us thought that was a good approach to protecting flows, but again, not everybody thought that, and so Senate Bill 1639 was filed by the legislature back in the 78th session. One of the things that the Senate Bill 1639 did was to impose a moratorium on these kinds of water right permits, on processing them by TCEQ. Brought that to a halt. But another thing that that bill did do was to create a precursor to the EFAC, something known as the Study Commission of Water for Environmental Flows. That group met during the legislative interim, back after the 78th session, worked very hard with a number of stakeholder groups and other interests in the water area to come up with a proposal, some recommendations that became what is now known as Article 1 of Senate Bill 3, filed last session. Now, if you've been following this, you know that Senate Bill 3 did not pass. There was broad support for the environmental flows language in Article 1, but there were many other things in the bill. Long story short, the bill didn't pass. And so here we are. Now, at the beginning of the 80th session, Governor Perry did recognize the importance of environmental flows, issued an executive order back in October of 2005 that created the Environmental Flows Advisory Committee. Committee's charge was pretty broad, examine all the relevant issues that around this issue of environmental flows and make recommendations for TCEQ, commission action, and for legislation to protect environmental flows while addressing human needs, especially during a drought period. The committee was also directed to establish a process, a consensus-based process, to achieve, to integrate environmental flow protection with needs, human needs. This is something that was integral to Article 1, Senate Bill 3. We'll get into a little bit, Colette will get into more detail on that in a minute. So this was a nine-member committee. Chairman Fitzsimmons was one of the members named back in March of 2006, last year. They conducted a number of public meetings in Austin and appointed a five-member science advisory committee, Kevin referred to. Recognition is there that having a science advisory committee to advise these different policy committees is very important. We want to have that sound science underpinning for any kind of policy that goes forward, and so that was accomplished. The committee issued its final report just before Christmas, December 20th, contained 32 recommendations that Colette will cover. Talk a little bit about the Science Advisory Committee. They were directed, first of all, this was a diverse group. Different areas of the environmental flow science were represented by the members of the committee. They were directed to go back and look at the Senate Bill 1639 Science Advisory Committee report, a pretty extensive document, to look at those recommendations, see if things needed to be tweaked or updated. They did recommend that those recommendations be carried forward. Of course, they provided technical support to the EFAC, worked closely with state agency staff so that we could ensure that the deliberations of the committee were effective and efficient. They also provided some new definitions, or new recommendations, I should say, one being this definition of sound ecological environment that Kevin referred to. So there's that for us to draw from if necessary. Also gave us some recommendations about looking at something called a desktop methodology. Kevin described in stream flow studies that take 3 to 5 years. We don't always have time to wait for those study results to be complete. Permitting decisions, planning decisions go forward, and so we need some kind of a way to provide that interim information in the meantime. Also some excellent feedback to the agencies for how we should revisit the state bay and estuary freshwater inflow methodology. So the EFAC recommendations fell into 5 or 6 broad categories. One of the most important is the Senate Bill 3, Article 1, environmental flows process, just how you go about from a stakeholder regional basis providing, taking the science input and providing recommendations back to TCEQ for establishing the flows. We'll get into that in more detail. Another area that we're very interested in at Parks and Wildlife is this idea of land stewardship. Voluntary land management on the ground, as you all know, is very important for being able to ensure both water quality and water quantity. What happens on the ground really affects what happens with water in general. So we have a couple of recommendations there we're happy about. Water trust and marketing. You know, in a state that's as fully appropriated as Texas is, without having the ability to take existing water rights and use those to protect environmental flows, that's so key, so important to being able to do this. And so there were a number of excellent recommendations, states, determined at Simmons, that are going forward with the recommendations from the EFAC. Funding. Without funding, none of this really can be done well, or done, period, really, in my opinion. And so there are some funding recommendations there to really help the agencies and these regional groups that you'll hear about more to really be able to do their jobs well. And some recommendations about existing flow programs, several that are directed at the in-stream flow program as well as the earlier state bay and estuary methodologies that I mentioned, recommendations for how we can do a better job and improve the work that's been done and build on that. And then some general clarification definitions, so on and so forth. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Colette Barron, and she's going to talk about the recommendations in more detail. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Colette Barron, attorney with the Legal Division. And frankly, Cindy stole a lot of my material, so I'll try not to repeat. She didn't tell me about she was going to do that. I know it was a mistake on my part. The EFAC's recommended regulatory method for protecting environmental flows does find its genesis in Article 1 of SB 3, which was the product of, shall we say, a very unprecedented coordinated effort between environmental groups and water developers. Parties who had normally been on opposite sides of the table had actually gotten together after seeing what was happening with these in-stream water right applications and seeing pending litigation and different things. They thought it was time to bring it into their own hands and come up with a cooperative method for moving forward on providing some water for environmental flows. So their goal was to create a proactive regulatory scheme to protect in-stream flows and freshwater inflows. So the EFAC recommends establishing these river, basin, and bay stakeholder groups supported by expert science teams to propose initial environmental flow regimes for their regional rivers and streams. This would replace the current TCEQ permitting process in water rights where public input is limited to just an opportunity to comment on the original application as filed, and only parties with protected legal interests may participate in further deliberations in an evidentiary contested case hearings and such. So it's a nice departure from that arena. So these regional groups would forward their recommendations for not only the establish what the environmental flow needs are, but also strategies to meet those needs. They would forward their recommendations to the TCEQ, which would then propose rules to set these environmental flow standards. The rulemaking process itself offers an opportunity for additional public input, including, you know, input from Parks and Wildlife if we haven't, you know, participated enough or we have a different opinion from the earlier processes. The flow standards, again, would be applied prospectively to water right applications in contrast to the current regulatory scheme, so that now we have persons who would know the expected level of environmental protection before the permitting process. In places where we have unappropriated water available to meet the environmental flow needs, the state would set aside water to meet those needs, and that's something very new in the state of Texas. It's akin to reservation systems that we see in other western states. So we have these environmental flow standards that are derived from stakeholders and backed by the best science available. SB3 and ESAC go a very innovative step further and make these flow standards and implementation strategies to meet those standards subject to adaptive management. They'll be subjected to periodic review and opportunity for revision. This is a much needed radical departure from current permitting, where environmental protection is relegated to a one-shot, one-day-in-time determination in a perpetual water right, without any rights to go back and revisit these issues. So this recommendation allows and really mandates that we monitor success and failure and that we rely upon the best available data and science. Another, as Cindy mentioned, very positive and innovative recommendation is the support and promotion of land stewardship practices that benefit water. You know, the state has come a long way in raising public awareness of the value of water conservation on the utility or delivery side, and now it's time to educate folks about the conservation relationship between land and water and get some more participation in that. Sound land stewardship practices may create additional flows, reduce pollution, improve water quality, and restore natural habitat on both land and water. The ESAC also recommends creating incentives to attract landowners to those practices that benefit water in the state. The proposed regulatory process that we talked about earlier reaches only future water rights. It's prospective. The vast majority of surface water in Texas has already been permitted. It's not reachable under this environmental flows process that may come down the line. So the ESAC had to look to ways to find voluntary environmental flow protection in existing water rights. This was sort of the big elephant in the room in this discussion, that while we all had these positive thoughts about moving forward on, you know, environmental flow protection regulation in the state, what we weren't talking about was the fact that that wasn't going to help in large areas of the state where we have, at least on paper, water, we have river basins that are fully or even over-appropriated, meaning that if everyone who had the authority to turn on a spigot took their water out, we would have nothing left flowing in these basins. So, you know, again, one step at a time, and we're real pleased for any proactive movement toward getting environmental flow protection its proper spot in regulation, but we have, the ESAC didn't really take, you know, didn't really try to tackle that monster. So one thing that they did recommend was beefing up the Texas Water Trust, which is a state repository of water rights dedicated solely to meeting environmental needs. It was created by the legislature in 97. It's housed over at the Water Development Board, but frankly, it's unfunded, it's unpublicized, and it has not been very successful. To this date, only three rights are in the Texas Water Trust. All of them are product of Parks and Wildlife efforts. If you'll recall, the first two deposits were two Rio Grande water rights donated to Parks and Wildlife from a rancher in Husted County, Chip Bramlett. The second donation by Texas State University last year came through an agreement with Parks and Wildlife over the River Center. So the ESAT clearly recognized the need to take this voluntary trust and this opportunity for participation and improve it and support it. And one would hope that, you know, support would include, you know, some funding and other nice things like that. The ESAC also recommended that Parks and Wildlife play a special role in protecting the rights that are in the trust. They proposed that Parks and Wildlife can step in and enforce those rights as if it were the water right holder. And this idea comes directly from SB3. So, you know, there was a recognition that, you know, Parks and Wildlife would be the natural agency to come in and try to protect those rights if they are committed to environmental needs and they are on deposit in the trust. Okay, this last highlighted ESAC recommendation is perhaps the most crucial one. In order to reach these, I see you smiling at me, in order to reach these existing senior rights, those that offer the greatest potential for restoring or maintaining water for fish and wildlife, we need an efficient water market for beneficial and voluntary water transactions. Chairman Fitzsimmons was instrumental in educating the committee about water markets in Western states, how they work, how private participation and environmental flow participation can work, and how it is, you know, much desired and much needed in Texas. So there's been a period of differing opinions about what authority is out there for individual water rights holders to use their water to protect environmental needs. So this recommendation, again, following similar language in SB 3, makes it clear that a water right holder can convert his or her existing rights to in-stream purposes, thus allowing private parties to leave water in-stream so that water may protect fish and wildlife, recreation, ecotourism, water quality, and other needs that are dependent upon sufficient flows. And finally, as Cindy pointed out, you know, always an issue in developing a new state program, the ESAC recommended that the stakeholder process and the supporting technical work be adequately and equitably funded. Actual funding amounts were not discussed or proposed during the committee process, but this task certainly remains to be done should any legislation be filed. For SB 3, the Water Development Board, TCEQ, and Parks and Wildlife all showed fiscal impacts from the bill and asked for funding. The legislative fiscal note that came back saw funding need for the other two agencies and nothing for Parks and Wildlife. So since we would provide a great amount of technical support for this proposed environmental flows regulatory scheme, we sure hope that there would be more support for Parks and Wildlife should there be any further legislation filed. So with the ESAC recommendations being a step forward in providing water for environmental flows, staff recommends that you adopt a resolution endorsing the recommendations of the ESAC. And Cindy and I are available for questions.
Khalil, I want to thank you and Cindy, recognize the two of you in particular, but the entire staff for doing an incredible job. It's no coincidence if you want to get something done here, you find two ladies. and it seems to, things seem to happen, but they did a great job. As you could tell, we were very busy the last 9 months on this, and these recommendations didn't come easily. There was some, they're not all unanimous votes, and it took some time. We had to table some of these, in some cases, for a month or more to work on the issue. A couple of things that to me really bear some focus here that I think change the landscape where we're really going to make a difference in environmental flows if these recommendations are followed by the legislature. First, I know this sounds, you know, sort of obvious, but it wasn't in the beginning, that a dedication to the water trust would actually be perpetual. Now, it's kind of hard as our economist and conservationist, Bear Vaughn, who was on the committee, pointed out, how are you going to raise money for a water dedication to the water trust if you don't know that when you spend that money and dedicate it to the water trust that it will be perpetual, that it can't be recovered in case of emergency or drought? That was a serious discussion. And what it really came down to is that there are a lot of people who are willing to sort of give lip service to conservation and environmental flows, but what they were really saying was, but when you really need it, I'm going to take it back. And that was, I don't know if you agree, but that was a big step where we made it clear that that option is available to a donor when they go on the water trust, that it really will be protected and perpetual, and it really will be there in a time of drought. We're not talking about a lot of water. Now, on the other hand, it may make some people reluctant, but it's the option of the donor, and that's important, keeping that market decision to the private entity. Then I think the other thing that was important, of course, the one you mentioned, on really recognizing the equality of an environmental or in-stream right the same as any other, which is not the case today. And that's where you're going to make a difference. As Colette points out, so much of this work and so much of the data collection and the technical work is really done on a very small amount of water. It's that junior water, that post-85 water, the only one with the reservations. And so when it gets dry, it's that senior water that's got to be, it's the only option you have to protect flows. So you all did a great job. It's a lot of work. And if we do this, it'll make a difference.
Just about, I think what I think all the commission feels, to compliment you for your leadership here and for the importance of making this a voluntary and a market-based system. I think that's kept it, to the extent I follow this, you know, in the realm of political possibility as opposed to an enforced, mandated, government-driven program that people don't have a choice about. So I think the principles and why is the scientific foundations being laid, this is a huge framework that's being put in place, and you need to get a lot of, I know you're not looking for credit, but we thank you for the work you did on this, the leadership provided. I understand. But your leadership has made a huge difference, and we all appreciate that.
And I agree with Commissioner Montgomery. As long as I've known Joe as an attorney for many years, he's always been very sensitive to water rights. He's been on top of that area of the law. When I first came on the commission, that was one of his priorities. And Joe, you've done a hell of a job. You really have. You're very dedicated. And your dedication is not so much to the water, well, it is to the water, but to the use of that water for the natural resources of the state, which is our mission. It's a very thorny area of the law, it's needless to say. And anyway, Joe, congratulations. Thank you.
Enough of that.
Ditto on everything. But I was going to ask the, obviously, the question that was brought up already, the hard question, and where do we go? I assume we'll pass this, but where do we go then? I mean, where do we find funding? How do you fund, for example, this water trust, or what were the thought processes on that?
Well, the water trust is really separate from the issue of funding all this research going on. I really see that if you look at the history of land conservation and the record of the past 30 years of raising private money and dedicating private money, private-public partnerships, land conservation, if we do anything close to that with water in the next 25 years, I feel confident that we're going to be in pretty good shape. It's going to take a lot of private action. But I think we see more and more investment, private investment in conservation, be it on private land or not. What this does, it lets you also invest the water component of your property. And if you're allowed to do that, I may be wrong, but I really think that there's significant support there. Now, the other big funding issue, which is another elephant in the room, is how do you fund all this research? And that's really going to be a fight. The experts are in here. I'm not the expert, but that's really a push-pull between general revenue and how much of it's Fund 9 and how much money we have our Fund 9 and how much money we have to match in other areas. But, that's a big part of it. Is there a motion? Moved by Ramos, second by Holt. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. Motion carries. Thanks, everybody, for all your work on that.